You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, your host for Dishin' and Swishin' each week. And we're doing a little bit of a new section this time. People have liked the roundtables and love the analysis we always get from Debbie Antonelli. So periodically, Debbie's going to pop in. And while Debbie does Shoot Around with Beth Mullins, which is my favorite podcast during the NCAA season, we're going to dish a little with Debbie on Dishin' and Swishin' as well. And Debbie's on the line with me right now. Debbie, how are you today?
David, great. Thanks a lot for having me on. I'm excited about being a part of your show again.
Well, it's always great to have you. And let's talk about a couple of the things, first of all, that we saw already in the first round of games from the WNBA. The first thing was, you know, when we did a podcast, one of the things we really talked about was Phoenix being a bit of a resurgent team that was a popular pick for winning the championship. And they've certainly not started out the way that you would expect from them.
I agree, and I'm not backing off of them winning the championship. I still pick them, but there is a learning curve for Brittany Griner, and I think we're seeing it play out a little bit on the defensive end. Even though she's been typically the best defensive player in the NCAA, and she's won the award the last 3 years on the national level, I think the defensive three-second rule has changed and has added a new learning curve to the way she defends the two-man game, which, you know, probably 70 or 60% of the offense that teams run involve a two-man game and a lot of isolation work. So it's hard to isolate anybody on the block with Griner, but if you can move her off the lane and get her involved in the two-man game, and I don't think Taurasi has played her best basketball yet, and, you know, Phoenix is not going to peak early because they don't have Penny Taylor back yet. So, I mean, I'm not panicked yet. They are 0-2 to start the season, but I think once Ms. Taurasi decides that she wants to take over in the fourth quarters, then I think they'll be fine.
On the other side of the 3-C coin, we have Chicago, who is off to a great start, and then Tulsa is also struggling probably a little bit more than we all expected coming out. Now, the WNBA has obviously laid their eggs, a lot of their marketing, on this 3-C. How do you think this is going to work out when it starts out the way that it is? Are they going to be able to sustain some momentum even when two of the teams start out slowly?
Well, you know, the 3-C branding opportunity was fantastic. I mean, here you have three of the best players in college coming out at the same time and giving the WNBA an opportunity to move that slogan forward, the 3-C. So they've got ticket packages around it, and although, you know, Diggins is 0-3 to start and Griner's 0-2, Deladon is rolling along and Chicago looks great. We thought they would look good. They're going to be really fun to watch develop. And I think they can sustain enough offense when EPIF has to leave for those 17 days that she might be gone. So I think it's 17 days, David. You know, I mean, this is a business. Basketball is a business. And the WNBA put their stamp on these three rookies. It's some pressure if you deem it to be pressure. I think all three of them, knowing their personalities, look at it as opportunity. I will say this, though. 3-C, remember me, past MVP. And I think you've got to pay notice to Parker and Catchings and Taurasi and Charles. It's too early to be talking about MVP of the WNBA, but Angel McCautry, who's never won the MVP, is going to be a candidate if Atlanta continues to play like they have. We may have missed on Atlanta early because I was expecting their point guard position to be their weakness. By committee, Jasmine Thomas has improved, and Alex Bentley is not shy. I mean, Bentley is looking to score and has a scoring mentality. Now, as long as she's making those shots, it'll be okay, because if she's not making them, then Angel's going to casually say, running up the floor, hey, get me the ball. And Angel can score on anybody. But the business of basketball and the product, because that's what I care about, you know, you know, I've given my four P's of basketball economics, my little theory on, is a basic economic theory about product, price, promotion, and place. Our product is really good in the WNBA, and the 3-C help enhance that, but it gives every team an opportunity to market and piggyback off of the success of those three college players, and it's going to take some time. Of course, Griner's learning curve may be a little bit steeper than everyone else's, but by the time she gets it, it's going to be fine, and she's still worth going to pay a price of admission to go see.
you know, the interesting thing yesterday was the Tulsa Shock went into Chicago for a game that was, you know, possibly Tulsa's ugliest game so far. But 12 busloads of people came from Notre Dame to see Skylar Diggins. And that just speaks volumes about, you know, the way that the Notre Dame faithful are going to be investing in her as a pro. And I've heard rumblings that there's talk about a potential preseason game in Delaware next year involving the Sky and the Mystics. So that's a possibility right there. So I do think that you're right, that they're going to continue to try and do this branding, and it's going to be have some learning curves. But winning and the college crowds will help, is certain, that's for sure. Now, we talked that you mentioned Angel McCautry and how great Chicago is off to. Atlanta and Chicago were both off to dynamite starts. They're both undefeated at this point. And you mentioned Piff leaving. Let's not forget that a healthy Sancho Little is going to be leaving Atlanta soon. So both of these teams are going to have to overcome that.
Yeah, and I would say usually, you know, it's easier to neutralize guard post play than it is really good guard play. And since I've already seen Atlanta live, Sancho doesn't post up. She's not a post player. So they can play four out around DeSouza, who I thought dominated the five position against Atlanta. I thought she looked great. I think that Atlanta will have an easier time absorbing the loss of Sancho Little than Chicago will have with the loss of Piff, because she's such a scorer, such a dominant player with a ball in her hands. I think that's going to be interesting to watch. But I think Chicago, because they're going to be playing well with confidence and be in a flow and in a rhythm, I think they'll be fine. It's just it would be a little more challenging for them to lose Epiphany.
Now, staying in the East for a second, you had a wonderful experience on Friday night as the Indiana Fever had their flag raising. So congratulations to being a part of all the success of the Fever for as many years as you have been. That must have been really great after being vested in the team for as long as you have.
David, it was incredible that the Indiana Fever front office would award Chris Denari and myself both rings. Chris has been with the Fever since the start. This is his 14th year, and this is my 12th. And, I haven't been a part of a championship since 1985 when we won the ACC tournament my junior year. So it's been a while. You know, all the basketball that I've seen and covered and all the teams I've watched cut down the nets, it's a different feeling when you get to actually be a part of a franchise. And I'm so thankful that Indiana was considerate of Chris and myself to give us rings. It's a beautiful ring. I hope everybody gets a chance to see the Indiana Fever's championship ring, because the Indiana Fever franchise did not waste any money on or didn't go to any, you know, what am I trying to say? There was great expense put on these rings. They're beautiful. And I know the players were very appreciative, and it was very emotional. And Laurel Richie was there, and actually on game day, she came into the locker room, and Lynn Dunn always lets me watch film with the team after they go through their workout. And Laurel Richie came in the locker room and watched film also. She had never been in that environment before to watch film. Then she presented each player with a book that she had composed and put together of all it was like a pictorial and a review of the journey to the championship. And it was very well done. Laurel was very emotional giving it to the players. You can see what a great leader she is and how invested she is in the league and the product and the players. And it was really a great night. Now, I don't think that the ring ceremony had anything to do with Indiana losing. I thought Atlanta played great. Angel had 29, and their point guard play was good. Indiana's defense wasn't what it typically is. But, you know, not to make an excuse for them, but they are down a few players, and their rotations are certainly affected. Hopefully it will add to their depth when Aaron Phillips can come back and Jessica Davenport can come back and Jeanette Poling gets back, because you certainly could see where you missed a 6'5 center in the middle. They don't have anybody with that kind of size without Dav. But Atlanta played really well, and they looked very connected, and I thought Fred Williams did a fantastic job with them. So it wasn't necessarily the emotion of the ring ceremony or the banner raising. I thought Atlanta just won.
You know, after only two games, though, one thing that we will have to keep an eye on as the games start to get spaced closer together as they are now becoming, is the minutes that those veterans are playing, having forced to play in Indiana right now. I mean, Catchings and Douglas playing over 35 minutes apiece in both of the first two games.
Yeah, you're granted, right.
There's a
and
big
I know Coach
gap in between, but that can't continue all, for a long stretch
no.
of time.
That's not what Coach Dunn would prefer. I don't think even Tamika or Katie would prefer that. I don't believe they had to play that many last year. I thought they both were around 30, 31. And it is a significant difference. People that don't think that 3 or 4 minutes is a big deal, over the course of a long season, it can be. Because the level of play is so much better. I mean, I think back to the beginning of the league and when this time of the year, turning the ball over and teams, you know, just not very efficient offensively. The level of play, I think, has been outstanding. And it's exciting because wait till we get to September and October. It'll be really good. It'll be like Game 7 every night.
There you go. Now, unfortunately, the weird thing about this is we're starting to become more like the NBA and the fact that home court advantage is really becoming a huge factor as these teams even out. I mean, we talked about Phoenix and expecting big things out of them and also Los Angeles, yet we look and Seattle and San Antonio knock off each of those teams on their own home court. You know, San Antonio showed me something right there because I thought L.A. actually had the best weekend, opening weekend of anybody. And then the Storm Crazies, of course, you know, I love it anytime they can beat Taurasi in Seattle. So home court advantage is really something that's becoming significant, even more so than in prior years.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's a great point about San Antonio because, you know, they have tremendous balance, and they always have. And Dan Hughes does such a great job of running an offense where everyone gets a touch. They're not a quick shooting offense. They're very efficient. They're more of a ball control offense than they are a defensive oriented team to me. And they're doing this without Becky. If they can hang around and just stick around till Becky Hammon gets back, they may have a chance to be battling for that fourth spot in the playoffs. And of course, Brian Agler, you said the same things about his team and what he's been able to do in Seattle. I think that was more surprising to me than the San Antonio win.
I agree. They played like a cohesive, confident team against Phoenix, and they deserved that win. There was no question about it. And, you know, I always like the girls to bang inside and play hard. But, you know, I've got a soft spot for Camille Little, who has that inside-outside. And I actually think that somebody like her might be a better fit right now in Phoenix than somebody like Candace Dupree, who I think is kind of getting in Griner's way a little bit on the offensive end.
Well, I love Candace Dupree's game. I love her length. I like her IQ at the four position. I just think Griner's learning curve is going to take some time. You know, if you remember on the last podcast, I talked about Sylvia Fowles, and if she could shoot 60% from the floor, that Chicago would be a dominant team, and they would be in the playoffs for sure. You know, she's shooting 67% right now after a couple of games. The spacing on the floor changes when you have a player like Deladon. I think the same thing about Griner. The spacing is going to change, and once Taurasi decides, you know, I don't know. Like I said, Diana's just laying in the weeds. She's not ready to strike yet, but we will know it when she does.
That's for sure. Now, one of the things that we wanted to touch on is, you know, one of the big marketing things, in addition to the 3-to-C, is the WNBA has gone to this whole new logo, new font. I've heard complaints about it. I've heard compliments about the lettering, how it's half vowel, half uppercase, half lowercase on uniforms. But the website itself, I kind of like the new look of it. You know, it's kind of a slick look. The pictures move quickly. And they're starting to get some content that, while I thought was weakened in some of the prior years, we were talking about one of the pieces they put up recently where they compared NBA and WNBA players. And I thought that was pretty cool. They're mirror images. But we both have a little disagreement on some of those choices that they put up there. I mean, I don't know about Tamika Catchings and Kevin Garnett as a mirror image.
Yeah, that was the first one that came up on that story, and I do love the content. I agree with you. I think this is a really fun and interesting stand-around-the-coffee-pot discussion in the mornings, you know, because it's hard for me to find a compliment on the NBA side to Catchings for all that she does. Kevin Garnett was an interesting choice, but I think Catch's offensive skill is a little bit more like Nowitzki, her defensive skill might be like Garnett, but it's hard to find a combination of the two. You know, I'm waiting for the WNBA to name the Defensive Player of the Year award to Mika Catchings award, which I think will probably come when she retires. It's just my guess because I don't know for sure if they would do that. But she is she's a lockdown defender. She's a great leader. She's just a well-round player. She's certainly the face of the franchise. I don't know. The one that I'd like to discuss with you, David, and get your thoughts on is Carmelo and Simone. Because I thought that Angel McCautry was more like Carmelo. You know, that she dominated the ball and needed to have the ball, took a lot of shots. All the offense was run around her. I think Minnesota with Maya Moore in the, you know, on the floor with Simone doesn't make me feel like Simone is that kind of a dominant basketball personality, you know, where I think Angel is. So I always thought Angel was more like Carmelo. When people ask me about Angel McCautry's game, I've always said, well, think about the Knicks and Carmelo, and they go, okay, they get it. You know, immediately you think, take a lot of shots, demand the basketball, incredible scorer, almost unguardable, with size, has the perimeter skill and the quickness. I'd probably say Angel's a better defensive player than Carmelo, but that was one that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you on it. I thought when I saw the Carmelo Anthony and I started to think about it, I thought Angel McCautry was more of a matchup too, most definitely. That kind of struck me as one that might be a little bit off. You know, you look at Simone's game, and she's so good taking it to the basket, like so many of the NBA point guards, but then she also has the skill, that spot-up jumper is so dead on. You know, she really is kind of a cross between some of their offensive games. Because she doesn't, just because she doesn't pass as a point guard, she has the abilities to. Yeah, I was thinking almost if it weren't for the assist component, Deron Williams was kind of a matchup for Simone because the way he takes it to the basket fearlessly, yet has that jump shot that can nail the three-pointer all the time.
Well, one of the things I always love to say about Simone is that she won two Wade trophies and didn't really shoot the three. It's because her game was, 18 feet in and unstoppable in college. And that's the way D-Wade was in his prime. You know, I remember watching D-Wade in the 08 Olympics, and I think he took a 15-foot perimeter shot from the wing, and I think it hit the side of the backboard. I mean, he was not a perimeter jump shooter. He was a mid-range guy. He wasn't a deep guy. And whereas Cappy, you know, the comparison with Cappy and D-Wade, I love that D-Wade tweeted about an honor to be, mirrored to Cappy, because I think Cappy's just, I love Cappy. Cappy, to me, is more like Allen Iverson in his prime. You know, just strong, can't knock her off her line going to the hoop, can get a shot anytime she wants. I'm sure they were sticking with current NBA players, but I've always thought that Cappy was more like Iverson.
I would think that, the person that jumped to my mind when I was thinking about Cappy was Chris Paul. Because he's got that physical strength as well that Cappy does in fearlessness and going to the basket. And, same situation. Cappy could, probably rack up a ridiculous amount of assists if she was needed to or wanted to. But that's not the case. She's needed to score, and she does it as well, if not better, than just about any guard in the WNBA.
And I love just that we can even have this conversation, because there are some people that don't think that you ought to compare the women's players to the men. And I disagree only because people have more of a brand recognition with the guys. They know the guys. And when you can say that Angel McCautry's game is like Carmelo Anthony, I think people understand. It gives you a general idea. And it's a great selling point for why you should come and watch them play.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. What people have to realize is it's possible to compare the men's game and the women's game without saying that the women just don't play the game as well as the men. Right? It's different, but the skill sets are similar. So you certainly can compare the individual talents. Nobody's saying that, Maya Moore is going to shoot like Jerry West over her career. And nobody's saying that Tina Charles is going to do the things that Karl Malone did.
Right.
But you can compare their skill sets and put it together that way. So I agree with you. We don't want to take too much longer on this, but one of the things that I did want to also mention was I thought that just in general, the way the WNBA.com has adjusted. The standings are easy to find. The teams are easy to find. So garbage is they've taken over the years for their website being perhaps a little slow on the uptake. I want to make sure that we give them some praise as well on this time.
Yeah, and I have no problem paying $15 for live access. And people were complaining last year about paying $5. I think it is definitely a worthwhile product, and it's definitely helps me stay on top of the league. And I agree with you. I love the website. I love the redesign. I like the whole branding and the 3-2-C to start. But I just don't want us to forget about those greats that we have out there that are some of the greats in the history of our game that are all future Hall of Famers that have paved the way and are still worth going to watch and see.
Well, no greater authority on basketball than Gino Auriemma tweeted on the day of the first games that he didn't wait for the 3-2-C. I believe it was Parker and Maya as the 3-2-C that he couldn't wait for. So that tells you right there that, you know, yes, the people that are in the know or expect good things out of the rookies, but let's not forget the people that you're talking about, the people that have been doing it. And based on the first week's performances, they all certainly aren't about to let us. Congratulations to Angel McCautry and Candace Parker, the first players of the week as well. Now, you talking about the history of the game, we're going to change topics here. You have a big upcoming weekend that I want you to talk about and share with our listeners, please.
Well, this is the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame induction weekend, and the 2013 class is awesome, outstanding. I'm so excited. I'm on the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame Board of Directors. I'm the treasurer of the board. And our primary responsibility is to vote in each year's class. So we like to put six in. And there are some rules. The decision-making and the grind over who gets in is very daunting. It is a confidential process, but it is a process that we try to make sure that we honor the past, celebrate the today, and look forward to the future. I mean, it is an incredible opportunity and honor to be a part of this. I've been a part of the Hall of Fame Board of Directors. I believe this will be my seventh year, and I get to MC all the events, and it's really fun, David, because we'll have an event in the morning where the players or the inductees will get a chance to sign autographs, and then the induction ceremony itself is such a first-class event with a full orchestra, and it is just incredible. The inductees come up and they tell their story. And when they tell their story, each one of them has a different delivery and approach, but they all share the same appreciation for all the people that have helped them in the game. And it's just a great reminder of us not to forget where we came from.
And why don't you tell people who don't know who this year's class includes so you can see why you're so excited.
Well, I'm so excited because Gary Blair is going to go into the Hall of Fame, the head coach at Texas A&M. Jim Foster, who's now the head coach at UT Chattanooga, who had a brilliant career at Ohio State and at Vanderbilt and at St. Joe's, so he's going to take his talents to Chattanooga. Peggy Gillum, you know, the Gillum sisters, Jennifer's already in the hall. She went in a couple of classes ago, and now Peggy's going to get a chance to go in, and I'm excited for her to join her sister in there. You know, the Gillum name is so big in the state of Mississippi. They've done so much for USA basketball. And then Jen Rosati, one of the all-time great point guards in the history of our game, and of course one of the players that helped to get the game major recognition back in the mid-90s when Connecticut, you know, sort of burst on the scene and won their first national championship. She was a part of that. Annette Smith Knight, who is the all-time leading scorer in the history of Texas basketball, and then Sue Wicks, a three-time All-American from Rutgers, who is one of the all-time greats in the history of Rutgers basketball program. So I'm very excited about all of them. I can't wait to hear their induction speeches, and I'm excited about being a part of it.
And, of course, anytime you have a gala reception that has speeches of Connecticut and Tennessee together, you have something special going on there. Both Holly Warlick and Gino Auriemma are co-hosting the reception that it's going to be at East Tennessee's Historical Center. As you mentioned, the autograph session starts on Saturday morning, and then the big ceremony, and then the silent auction raises money afterwards too. A lot of great things, a lot of things involved. Most of the previous inductees that can make it come down for this, and you know, it's certainly going to be a wonderful event.
the people at the Hall of Fame do an incredible job. They work hard to prepare for this event all year, and the city of Knoxville has embraced it and continues to put their best foot forward and care about our game. And I'm so thankful to be a part of it, David. It's really a fun event. If anybody's in the area and in the Knoxville area, they should come and see, because it's fun.
Well, Debbie, enjoy every minute. You're just rolling with these big weekends. I mean, between, you know, the Tyler Summit wedding last weekend and graduations this week, it's big doings for the Antonellis these days.
David, you know, we call it free balling at my house with my three boys. They're all graduating this week, and the Tyler Summit wedding was absolutely outstanding. Pat Summit could not have looked more proud or more beautiful in her glowing blue gown that matched the steely blue eyes, and Tyler is the first groom I have ever seen smile from the very beginning all the way through to the end of the night. I've never seen anybody smile like that, and this was just beautiful. It was in a church downtown Knoxville, the oldest church. The family that Tyler's wife is a ninth generation member of this church in Knoxville, so, I mean, you're going way back to the 1800s. And it was just incredible. It was a great weekend. There were a lot of happy people, and Pat Summit has done an incredible job raising a terrific young man.
Well, Debbie, enjoy it all. It's upcoming. I'm glad that the wedding was so good. Nothing but good things should happen in that family. I think that's a great way to put a wrap on this. Deb, I want to thank you for taking time to come on and talk about some of the things that are going on in the WNBA and the basketball world right now.
Hope we can keep it going, David. It certainly was fun. It's always great visiting with you.
My pleasure. Thanks again. Good night.
This is Maya Moore, and you're listening to Dishin' and Swishin'.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. WNBA season, finally, every team has gotten at least one game under their belt. And just to show you how close and how interesting the season is going to be, you know, I have with me Coach Carol Ross of the Los Angeles Sparks, a team that I thought was probably the most impressive team in week one. And then San Antonio managed to defend home court and take out the Sparks in their second game. Coach, how are you today?
Well, if we'd have talked last week, I would have felt really good. Now I'm just like most coaches. I'm confused.
Well, it certainly was confusing because, you know, the first game, everybody was clicking on all cylinders. You got tremendous performances from Christy Tolliver and Neka Ogwumike. Candace Parker did her thing. But the big difference that I saw, of course, in between game one and game two was the presence of Elena Beard in game one, but you didn't have her in game two.
Well, that's right. You know, it's, you know, without Beard, we're a very different team, and certainly she brings a toughness, especially on the perimeter defensively, and, you know, great leadership ability. So that was a factor, but it's certainly not an excuse. You know, we just did not defend and rebound, and we all know that when you go on the road, you have to do those things to give yourself a chance, and we just didn't play as well or as hard as I hope we would.
Well, for the Sparks fans, first, let's discuss Elena first. She comes back, you know, she's banged up as the season even begins. She had injuries, history of injuries. Where do we stand with her as you head into this weekend?
She's good. I think, you know, it's just always more precautionary. You know, she's not injured, you know, but she's also a player that throughout the course of her career, she's a driven player, and it's very hard to have Beard sit for even a minute, much less a game. But I think she's also a wiser player than she was, you know, a few years ago. So now I think she's doing a better job of listening to her body, and I have all the respect in the world for, you know, what she hears. If she doesn't think she can go, then I'm all in with her, because she's a player that when she does practice and when she does play, there's hardly a player that does it any harder and gives greater effort than Beard. So she just didn't feel like she could go, but I do feel like by her sitting out, she has given herself a chance to come into hopefully the next game injury free.
You have one of the strangest schedules to start a season that I've ever seen. and it's got its good and its bad. The good, of course, is that you have, with this week between games for the first four games of the season, basically a week, 6 days, you get that extra time to rest for someone like Elena Beard, and you get a little bit more time to build the chemistry. But at the same time, yeah, you don't get that cohesiveness that you can only get when you're putting your team out in the court in a game situation.
Well, you're right. It's a little frustrating. You know, we do need to be game tested, and certainly we've shown that we can be really good some of the time and not very good at others. So, I really would have loved to have another game earlier this week just to see what's real. But, that's just the way it is. So we deal with it. You know, as a coach, we love practice. So I'm probably having more fun than my players, but, we're getting a lot done, that's for sure.
Now, one thing that you get to work on in practice, which is probably a good thing, is the adjustments a little bit to those rule changes. And, they supposedly were meant to open up things in the paint a little bit more. You know, as great as Candace can be at times inside as a shot blocker and as a rebounder, your team isn't a real strong physical team in the sense that you don't have really any strong true centers. Well, you have Brittany Griner in the league now, Sylvia Fowles, Tina Charles. So how do you as a coach adjust with your personnel? When we did our preseason roundtable, Debbie Antonelli suggested that you were going to be using the infamous Carol Ross zone a lot more.
Well, we do have things that, I love the way my team looks, really. We're faster. I don't know that we've learned exactly how to play as fast as I think we should, but it's a work in progress. We're lean and mean, and we've got to use that to our advantage. And I thought in the first game we did that. In the second game we didn't. So it's still a process. It's still teaching, and it's still selling the players that this is the best way for us to play. And as John Wooden so eloquently put it, speed kills. So we've got to use it. We've got to use it not just to go north and south, up and down the floor, but we've also got to use it in how we defend, whether it's, pick and rolls, whether it's one-on-one. We just got to do a better job of flying around and making plays and not let ourselves get caught in, a half-court muscle game that's really not going to be conducive to who we are.
Now, last year you went out and you signed Sharnay Zoll, and you thought that she was going to be the solution for last year for the point guard position. Now you went out and brought back an old friend, somebody that you're clearly familiar with from your Atlanta days. Lindsey Harding is certainly an upgrade to the point guard position for just about most teams in this league. So you've got to be thrilled, I know, to have somebody like her on your team now.
Well, I am very happy that Lindsey's a spark, and she really is that. she brings a lot to the table defensively, especially and offensively. She plays, when I'm talking about speed and aggression, we speak the same language there. So she knows what I'm talking about, and she knows how to play that way. And I think it's an evolution. We're a team that that we're learning to play really at a speed that Lindsey plays at. And hopefully, she's going to make the process move faster. And I think she's really going to benefit a lot of our players in ways that maybe are not as visible as people know.
One of the things, having Lindsey in the East for pretty much her entire career, I've seen how she does run at that speed. In that last game against San Antonio, there were some comments from people that I saw about questions about Lindsey taking perhaps a few too many shots. But what people don't realize is if you're not going to get the ball to the basket, or if you're not going to be in the right place, Lindsay's not going to wait for you. She knows what she has to do, and she's just going to go full steam ahead.
Right, and those, you know, those same people, were they asked, did they think Tolliver shot too much last year at the point position? I don't think so. So, you know, it's not about, you know, there's this mentality that point guards are supposed to pass all the time. Point guards are supposed to get a team, get the engine running, and they're a part of the engine. You know, it's not just like they turn the car on and then sit back and watch it run. They're helping drive it, and they are. She's got a great responsibility to be aggressive with the ball in her hands, and if that means shooting it, that's what I want her to do. I don't want any of my players to turn down a shot, especially if they've pushed the ball down the floor and we're, you know, looking for something quick and early. So, no, Lindsay's playing just exactly how I would like for her to play, and I think her teammates like how she plays.
And I would assume that you'll expect we won't be seeing such a passive, for lack of a better word, Nneka Ogwumike ever in our lifetimes as we saw in that one game. I think you probably sat there and said, who is this?
yeah, I don't know. Nneka went back to Texas, and I think I don't know what happened to her, but she has been tremendous at practice, and that's the response. You know, Nneka's standards for herself are higher than anything I could put on her. And that's the good news. You know, she knows what she needs to do, and she knows how to go about her business. But certainly that was a moment that we'll just let that one roll and put it behind us, because that's not the Nneka we know and love. And she's been terrific this week, so I think we'll see much more out of Nneka.
I think the home cooking has gone through the system now. I think it's back to L.A. style now.
Right, exactly. Too many kolaches.
One of the things about Nneka, though, you guys had pushed her to work a little bit on her outside game a little bit more. Are you comfortable and feeling good about the way she's progressed in the offseason?
Yeah, you know, Nneka's like, you know, any young player. When you come into the league, you're just trying to be what you were in college. You're not trying to, you know, walk in and transform into something. You come in and you play with confidence. And to play with confidence, you have to do what you do best. And I think Nneka did that last year. I think Nneka is a player that, when all else fails, Nneka feels good rebounding the ball. That's why it was so surprising at San Antonio. She really hasn't rebounded the ball as well in the first two games as she did at any point last year. But she's gotten back to that this week. So I think that's where Neca's greatness comes from. The rest of the game for Nneka, defensively, offensively, facing up, driving it, those are areas that her confidence is much higher offensively. But at the same time, when you're not rebounding the ball and you're Nneka Ogwumike, there's no other aspect of the game that's going to feel right to you. So I think she's yet to really get in her rhythm and get into the Nneka we all, you know, came to admire last year. So, but I've seen a lot of it this week, so I'm pretty encouraged by how she has really come to work this week.
Antonelli has a phrase. He said, yes, there's the three to see, but don't forget about me. I used to be an MVP. You've got one player that is off to a special start, already player of the week, that is a very special talent in Candace. And Candace looks like she's physically in the best condition that she's been in terms of her overall health, and just seems like she's ready to take it to the next level this year.
Yeah, Candace has been terrific. You know, I think she crossed the mud puddle and had some success in EuroLeague, and she's come back with that same, just that fierceness. She is hungry, and she's playing that way, and she's playing with great confidence and aggression, and you're seeing her great versatility. You know, in years past, sometimes she'd float around too much on the outside. Now she's really, there's a great balance between her play in the paint and her play on the perimeter. And, you know, she's rebounding. She's she's playing at a very high level right now, and hopefully, she'll maintain it, because she's very capable of it.
You know, Coach, I know that as a person that's been around for a long time coaching, and, you know, you don't get bogged down in these things, but what is your thoughts of this whole 3-to-C and the way that the league is trying to promote itself now to try and build its fan base? You know, is enough focus being placed on people like Candace, like Diana Taurasi, Maya Moore, you know, Tina Charles?
Well, I think, you know, the 3-to-C, I think that was a great marketing campaign. I think it accomplished what the league wanted it to accomplish, and that was pay attention to us. And these three players are a part of something special. So I think it accomplished all that. But now that the league's up and running, you know, it's about, you know, there are a lot of players that you know, they'll get their attention, that's for sure. There will come a time where it's going to be about the players that are getting it done, and if it's one of those three, that's great. You know, Deladon's been super. But the rest of the, you know, it'll evolve. It'll come full circle, and the campaigning and the marketing and all that, it'll end up in its rightful place, which is with the players that are getting it done.
You've got Phoenix coming up shortly in one of your, every 6 weeks games that are scheduled. Are you surprised that they've started out with a little bit of a few hitches in their rotations and, you know, starting out 0-2? Is that surprised you?
Yeah, I'm surprised. But at the same time, when you have you know, just for us going through it last year, you know, we got through our start a little more gracefully. But at the same time, when you've got new pieces, or in this case, so many of Phoenix players didn't play last season, and then you add in a unique piece in Brittany Griner, that it just takes a while to learn how to coach them together, what works best, what you thought would work might not work anymore, it's not the right thing. So it just takes time, and that's why at this juncture in the season, because we're so early, you're just trying to figure things out as a coach to try to help your team be the best team they can become, and it's a process. So, yeah, I'm surprised, but I'm still not, you know, I still think they're going to be a tremendous force. So, you know, it's not about how you start, it's how you finish.
Kind of nice to have a team with Candace Parker, Elena Beard, Christy Tolliver, Nekka Ogwumike, and Lindsey Harding, and be somewhat under the radar, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, I'm fine right where we are, which is a team that's, you know, there's nothing really to talk about with us yet. We've been great one night, and we've been awful at the next. That's only two games we have really to look at. So, you know, there isn't much to talk about with us yet, and you know, so we
you mean I shouldn't have done this
in, and see.
I shouldn't have done this until September.
I hope there's something to talk about late in September. I hope we have left our evil ways behind and we're back doing what we do best, which is rebounding and running.
Well, Coach, I have a feeling that this team is going to be right there in the end. And, you know, it's a loaded team with talent and a tremendous coaching staff. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the Sparks. I think you're going to have a great season.
Thanks, Dave. We appreciate that.
Coach, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. Good luck. You know, and we'll see you this weekend. Now, you get to see one of the 3-to-C this weekend, don't you?
Exactly.
But
we
you're going to miss
it. We'll get a taste of that.
But you miss out on Liz, don't you?
I don't know. You know, we who knows? Who's going to be in uniform? Prepare for this.
Injuries are killing people already. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
but
it is.
The nature of the game. Stay healthy and survive in advance, Coach.
That's right.
Take care and good luck.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.